Today, we are focusing on two pillars that shape the future of any nation: health and education, under the theme Sustainable Development and Humanitarian Action. We'll be discussing the United Nations' role and contributions in strengthening South Sudan's health and education system, the partnership that make these efforts possible, and how the UN ensure that vulnerable groups such as women, children, refugees, and persons with disabilities are not left behind.
So joining us this morning is Ms. Yudita Tesfa-Gabriel. She is Education Manager at UNICEF. And we are also joined by Ms. Sheila Bayer. She is Public Health Officer with WHO. Stay tuned as we unpack how these agencies are working hand in hand with the government and also local partners to build a healthier, better educated South Sudan. Let me start from Ms. Yudit. Good morning, and thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Good morning, everyone.
Yes, and as I mentioned earlier, that we are also joined by Ms. Sheila Bayer. Good morning, and thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Good morning. Thank you.
Okay, let me begin with Yudit from UNICEF. Could you briefly tell us how your agency, which is UNICEF, contributes to improving education and also maybe health in South Sudan?
Thank you very much. I would love to say that in the United Nations in general, not only UNICEF, particularly when we talk about education, we have UNICEF, UNESCO, WFP, and other UN agencies who are actively involved in supporting sustainable development and humanitarian action. So our work is hand in hand with the government of South Sudan to strengthen the education system, to making sure that no one is left behind. So our efforts are aligned with the Education 2030 agenda and the Sustainable Development Goals, especially SDG4 on quality education.
Okay. Let me bring in Ms. Sheila to speak about WHO and what you're doing to improve health in South Sudan.
Thank you very much, and I'm very happy to be here. So WHO is actually the champion for health. It's a global champion for health, for better health for everyone in the world. And as a UN agency, we are actually working with so many partners to make sure that we make health as a priority for everyone. Yes, so our work as WHO starts from working in managing emergencies, and from emergencies to persistent communicable diseases like HIV, malaria, emerging infectious diseases like Ebola, if you have heard about it, and also working with non-communicable diseases like cancer, diabetes, hypertension. So generally looking into bringing health to all. This is our mandate generally as a WHO and as a, one of the agencies for under the UN.
Right, and we understand that providing health services in South Sudan face so many challenges. We have issues of limited resources, issues of limited facilities, disease outbreak, issues of access. How is WHO working with government to strengthen the health system in general, regardless of these challenges we have just mentioned, maybe others we I didn't?
Yes, WHO actually is a member state organization. Like, for example, we are voted in by the countries. So WHO is in 194 countries, and South Sudan is one of those countries. And actually, to make to bring health to all, or to make everyone healthy, we have to work with other people. So we have to work with other agencies. We have to work with partners. We have to work actually with the government. So we work with all the government authorities, all the way from the national level to the community level. We are working with the government. And the other way is partnership. So we partner with other partners who are providing health, including other UN agencies like UNICEF and the other UN agencies who are working for health. So alone we cannot do it. We do it with partners. So WHO has a body called a health cluster, which brings in more than 70 health partners who are supporting and providing health services within the country. And through that, we are able to support, bring services and build systems all the way from the national level to the community level. So it's working together with the government and working together with the available partners. And our mandate is to make sure that we coordinate all the efforts that is coming in and make sure that there are no duplicates, and we also do advocacy.
Right. Yeah. Let me bring in Judith once again from UNICEF. This policy of every child must have free access to education, or access to free education, and it is actually a fundamental right of every child, and this is what UNICEF is advocating for. So how is UNICEF supporting access to education, especially for children in remote, hard-to-reach areas and conflict-affected areas?
Okay, thank you very much. First of all, I would like to highlight some of the key contributions that we do in supporting the Ministry of General Education and Instruction, both at national and subnational level. We develop and implement important policies, such as the Early Childhood Education Policy and the Teacher Education Policy, in order to improve quality teaching, as well as also early learning. We also have supported, in collaboration with UNESCO, in strengthening technical and vocational training through the TVET policy and qualification framework, helping young people gain skills that prepare them for the job market. We expand access to education for the most vulnerable children, especially adolescent girls, by training teachers, constructing and rehabilitating classrooms, providing water and sanitation facilities, including ministerial hygiene management, distributing learning materials and offering teacher incentives in hard-to-reach areas, especially during emergency responses. We run national back-to-learning campaigns every year, which helps to bring back thousands of children back to school. We provide, through WFP, school meals, which help children to stay in class, improve their concentration, and reduce dropouts. We ensure continuity of learning in emergencies, such as through alternative education programs like radio program, and also support for continuity of education. We also support public financial management reform, particularly in education, for enhanced transparency and accountability, as well as advocacy for increased domestic investment from the government in education through evidence generation, including public expenditure review, public expenditure tracking survey, and so on. So together as a UN, our contribution helps community not only to survive during crisis, but also build stronger systems for the future. So as part of our approach is partnership, like our colleague from WHO has already highlighted. Our work is possible only through strong partnership, mainly with the ministries, such as the Ministry of General Education and Instruction, as well as also Ministry of Health, particularly, as I already highlighted, on policy development, teacher training, curriculum reform, supervision, and inspection. We also collaborate and partner with local organizations and civil society organizations through the National Education Coalition and other groups, which advocate for implementation of quality education for everyone, which is stipulated in legal frameworks such as the Education Act of South Sudan of 2012, the education policy. We also support school governance. We mobilize communities and deliver supplies and services in hard-to-reach areas. But our collaboration goes beyond local organizations through our international donors and partners, particularly the Global Partnership for Education, the European Union, the FCDO, Africa Development Bank, the German government, and other key donors for their vital financial and technical support. And these partnerships are ensuring to reach with education services to children and teachers, even in the most hardest to reach, remotest part of South Sudan.
All right. Thank you so much, Judith. You almost answered all my questions. Let me bring in Sheila once again. How does WHO ensure that vulnerable communities, including women, displaced people, children, have access to the to all health services and they are not left out?
Okay, thank you. As I said, that WHO makes sure that there is everyone is healthy.
Mm-hmm.
So as part of our program area of work, we have an output whereby we monitor the equity of services, making sure that no one is left behind.
Mm-hmm.
And in that program, we make sure that the information that we are getting about people who are sick,
mm-hmm.
we get a detailed information about that person. So if like 5 people come to the facility, we look at how many of those are women, how many are male, how many are disabled,
mm.
you know, how many are coming from the refugee, how many are resident, how many are of the host community. So those kind of information helps us to plan better, to reach out to those communities. So we make sure that we collect this kind of information to make sure that we come with targeted response to all those vulnerable groups. And also we are an information organization where we collect information and share with other partners. And most of the partners use the information that we generate to also tailor their response mm. to all those vulnerable communities. We make sure that we also strengthen system to cater for all those vulnerable communities, because if you look at a community here in South Sudan, actually more than half are vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
You look at people are in IDP camps, people are displaced, people are returnees, actually those who are refugees in other countries and they have come back. So all those are catered for in planning. So when you take that information and you plan for it, you will be able to get tailored services
mm-hmm.
to all those vulnerable communities. There are other communities who are in very hard-to-reach areas. So you will have to, we plan for them through outreaches. You find we get partner organizations and make sure that services are reached to those locations. We have locations, like currently we are trying to deploy a team going to one place called Dajo. Have you heard of Dajo?
Never.
You haven't heard of Dajo?
Where is that?
Dajo is in New Lunguchu County.
Mm.
You see, and it is a cut-off community.
Mm-hmm.
But that currently there is an outbreak of measles going on there.
Mm.
There are no roads, there are no internet, no telephone network. You see, but there are people there.
Mm.
So we are trying to work with WFP to make sure that we reach this vulnerable community, because yes, they have a health facility, but we cannot get really accurate information and making sure that we go there. So one of the mandates of WHO is we have something called no regret policy,
mm-hmm.
whereby we do things very fast. So when somebody comes to hold us accountable, we don't regret it, because we have to save lives.
Right.
Yes. So making sure that we are the people who go fast, or in case nobody goes, we are the last people to go on ground to make sure that we provide services for the vulnerable.
Right. Thank you so much, Sheila. And Yudida, I still have questions for you, even if you answered all my questions now. There's these challenges of some areas that are really devastated with floods, for example, like Jungle, Bibor, Upper Nile, and some other places that don't have schools, infrastructure at all. How are you planning to respond to these people, or these people who have floods but the schools are washed away?
Thank you very much. This is very important, as flood is the most prominent cause of learning disruption at the moment. So our approach is coming up with alternative delivery of education program,
mm.
especially through radio. So we have solar charged or solar based radios. We develop lessons in flash disks, and the recorded lessons are being aired in terms of both at community level, like having like a group of children where they listen to and then they discuss on the lesson.
Mm-hmm.
And such things can also be facilitated even by non-teacher facilitators in situations where you don't have teachers or you only depend on community volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
And that is being supported through our national implementing partners, like mm-hmm. NGOs, who can really access those very difficult areas and who can also move with the community. So that's one approach that we are expanding, and it's really yielding some results because it can really help in terms of continuity of learning.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, also in terms of mobile schools as well, we are working now in terms of reaching children from pastoralist communities, mm-hmm. especially in cattle camps, where we are supporting facilitators to move with the community and support those children. But our approach is also not only to deliver education or to ensure that there is accessibility, access to education, but to mobilize the community.
Mm-hmm.
Because we all know that in terms of some of the cultural barriers that exist, particularly when we talk about child marriage and also child labor. Especially for child marriage, we try to understand and dig deeper in terms of the key barriers and community understanding and social values. So by understanding such, then we do our social and behavior change activities
mm-hmm.
to bring back to school those girls, particularly adolescent girls. We also try to enhance access to those who are really excluded or being marginalized through approaching or adapting to their situation. For instance, children with disabilities,
mm-hmm.
they are the most disadvantaged when we talk about children, and usually we try to do to enhance accessibility of the learning facilities and adapting of contents to suit those children. And when we talk about refugees and returnees or internally displaced children, we provide them with emergency education in camps and host communities. And our aim is for them to be fully reintegrated and mainstreamed in the formal education, those who can. But those who are overage children who couldn't proceed to the regular academic approach,
mm-hmm.
we're also trying to look for alternative approaches of non-formal technical and vocational training where they can have skills for their livelihood.
Okay.
101 FM. About the nation, across the nation. Radio Miraya.
Very good morning to all our listeners. Welcome back from that short break. And we have been having a discussion on the role of United Nations and their contribution in strengthening South Sudan's health and education system, and also the partnership that make these efforts possible. And with me here in the studio, Ms. Judith Tesfa Gabriel, she's an education manager at UNICEF, and also Ms. Sheila Baya, she's public health officer with WHO. Now, I'm going to pick up from you again, Judith. You mentioned about different approaches and different programs that you have for these different groups of people within South Sudan. Are those ongoing programs, or it is some of them are just starting to respond to these floods?
It's an ongoing program, but mm-hmm. we are also scaling up in most of the areas. But beyond the emergency response, we also try to do in terms of coming up with climate-resilient classrooms.
Mm-hmm.
We have been coming up with structures that can withstand floods. So this has been piloted in Western Barghazal, in Warap, through the European Union
mm-hmm.
support. And now it's being adopted in most of our interventions. So as we start a new program, now, especially with the Global Partnership for Education,
mm-hmm.
our approach is any construction that we do, we consider the flood resistance and climate resistant classrooms, which can really withstand such floods. Because the issue was for so long in South Sudan, most of the classrooms were temporary.
Mm-hmm.
In most cases, children learn under the trees. We still have such issues with 35,000 classrooms are running under the trees.
Mm.
So the need is so huge, and the contribution that partners are doing are not really fully addressing the issues, which is having 2.8 million out of school children in South Sudan, considering, like, in terms of proportion, it's the highest
mm-hmm.
in the region, even globally. So the approach is as much as possible to expand access, but the sustainability of the support that we provide should be much longer to support the existing young people, but beyond that as well. So our approach is now to come up with structures that can withstand for 15 to 20 years, both for classrooms as well as also for latrines or wash facilities as well.
Right. And are you implementing it all over the country or in specific states?
Mostly it's our, we target based on
the needs.
Mm-hmm. We can't have such support throughout the nation. We have limited resources,
mm-hmm.
but we prioritize first the most disadvantaged areas.
Okay.
So because our equity and inclusion approach dictates us to start with the most disadvantaged, especially in Upper Nile and Jonglei areas, which are our most affected areas.
Okay, yes. Thank you so much, Ms. Judith. Let me bring in Ms. Sheila once again. From your perspective, what is needed most to make health services more sustainable and resilient in South Sudan?
Yes, I think what is needed is continued partnership,
mm-hmm.
yes, and collaboration. My colleague said, the need is very huge.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and because it's a huge need, it needs people to work together. It needs the partners to come together and making sure that our response is coordinated and collaborated, and making sure that we don't, do the same thing, two partners doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But when we coordinate our response, we'll be able to make sure that our response is integrated and effective, and it helps build the system. Like, for example, with the current issues of flooding happening in most locations of the country, we have health facilities that have already been submerged under the water. So prior to the health to the floods, we have to work together to actually have preparedness plans, because we already know that floods are coming. So what are some of the things that we need to do? So in collaboration with our partners, including our donors, we were able to secure funding that has been able to, get emergency supplies for the floods response. And these supplies, we give it to partners who are on ground, who will be able to support in case locations are hit by floods.
Mm-hmm.
What do they do? So instead of coming back to ask for supplies, these supplies are prepositioned in some of the predicted locations. And from there, communities and population are supported with this. So sometimes population will be displaced very far, mm-hmm. from where they used to be. So working with partners, making sure that they reach to where the population are. And that's what partners are doing, having a mobile services where you go to this location, support the vulnerable population, and then you move to the next location. So making sure that we are flexible enough and getting these emergency funds, working together with developmental partners to make sure that we build resilient system. So I'm happy to hear UNICEF is trying to build schools or classrooms, you see, which are climate resilient.
Yeah.
And we are currently actually working with UNICEF to make sure that we develop county-level contingency plans,
mm-hmm.
which are climate resilient. So it's not going to only be for schools, but it will also be for health facilities, and making sure that counties are able to be resilient enough to withstand floods and to have plans which can be activated at any time to make sure that you respond to these emergencies.
Right. Yes. And Michelle, looking ahead, what are WHO priorities for improving health services in South Sudan over the next few years?
Of course, WHO priorities is aligned together with the government priorities, the mm-hmm. Ministry of Health priorities, and the Ministry of Health priorities is to make sure that services reach to the lowest level. So one of our priorities is to make sure that we have all the information about what is happening in the country. Mm-hmm. So we work with the ministry and work with partners to make sure that we gather all the information. And this information helps us to plan. And when we get this information, we will be able to plan to a location, like hard-to-reach location, making sure that all get the services they need, whether it's vaccination, routine vaccination, whether it is making sure that those who are HIV positive get their drugs on time, making sure that those mothers make sure that they get antenatal care on time. So these are the priorities that we built on what is already there set by the government.
Okay, yes. And Ms. Judith, what is the priorities of UNICEF to improve education in South Sudan?
So our priority is fully aligned with the education sector partners, which is led by the Ministry of General Education and Instruction, mm-hmm. which is put as part of the Partnership Compact, and it's transforming education through improving foundational learning, particularly on literacy and numeracy. So I just want to highlight that there is a learning crisis globally and at the region, and South Sudan is not unique in this situation, where most of year 10 children are not able to read and write. Mm. So beyond access now, the sector is moving together to transform so that young people or children can really write and do the mathematics, and which can be the foundation for them to build skills so that they can be fit for the 21st century world that we live in. So our goal is one and clear, which is to transform education through foundational learning.
Right. And as we are wrapping up this interview, what message would you like to leave with our listeners about the importance of investing in health, in education?
Okay, investing in education, it saves lives, mm-hmm. including in emergency. It's very important to emphasize that it also saves lives through provision of information, through normalizing the situation, and at the same time also it's the building block for the future of the nation. Mm-hmm. So it's only through education that can transform South Sudan to be a better place for the young generation and beyond. So we want to, as UNICEF and also as part of the UN community, we remain committed to really build a healthier, more educated and more peaceful South Sudan.
Right. Thank you so much. And Ms. Sheila, what message would you like to leave also with our listeners about the importance of investing in health for South Sudan's future?
Yes, I think you need to be healthy, to be educated, to do the work that you are doing.
Yes.
Yes. So it's very important to invest in health for the people of South Sudan. The people of this country is going through a lot. Mm-hmm. And currently, of course, apart from food, but health is also a priority. Mm-hmm. So it's very important for our partners and our donors to invest in health to secure a healthy nation. And a healthy nation is a productive nation. Thank you.
Yes, Ms. Sheila Baya, Public Health Officer with WHO, thank you so much for sharing your insight about WHO roles and contribution in strengthening South Sudan health.
Thank you very much.
Yes, and Ms. Judith Tesfa Gabriel, I don't know whether I've been mentioning this name right.
You did it well.
Yes, Education Manager at UNICEF, thank you so much for sharing also a lot of information about UNICEF role and contributions to South Sudan's education.